Yes, I heard. Kills men by the hundreds. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his ass. I am William Wallace, and I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You have come to fight as free men, and free men you are. What would you do without freedom? Will you fight? Aye, fight and you may die. Run and you will live, at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance? Just one chance to come back here and tell your enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom. Hello.
Oh my God.
Still practicing.
Yeah, the butchery of the battlefield has nothing on what just happened. I have no words.
I think it would go better if I painted my face blue or something.
I think you should. I think that's absolutely fitting for the podcast medium.
And also hair.
Because it's cold?
And perhaps a bit of anti-Semitism, and I would perhaps get the diction down.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, let's not make this the anti-Semitic podcast. What do you say?
Well, at least for now.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning.
How is the weather in Bergen?
It's raining.
Yeah, okay.
Still raining. Still rains. Yeah. It's hard to come back from that.
If it helps, if it's any consolation at all, it's a waterproof trousers day here in Oslo. We have rain too. So what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I did my homework, and some little birds have told me that you haven't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to watch the first episode of Lillehammer, and it's just, it's still not happening next week.
Because we found Lillehammer.
We did. Mm. We did. I now have access to season one of Lillehammer, and that's good. So watch this space, I guess. I am sorry about that. I'll tell you what, I'll give you some immediate follow-up after the last episode. Which is that after we talked a lot about hitting people in the face with a door, because the doors in Norway open outwards from rooms, our cook, Lynn, very nearly got a door in the face right after the last episode that we recorded. I carefully stepped out into the corridor and I still nearly hit her, and she was carrying coffee as well.
Is the door okay?
The door's great. Everything's great. But I'm just saying, I think it's a risk. Did nobody think of this? Scandinavian design is a lie.
But what if you are on your way out of the room with an inward store and somebody is just entering? The risk would be the same.
At the worst case, they're going to step through a little faster than they thought they would, I think. Which does sometimes happen.
But they still have to open the door, and you could be in the way.
What a nightmare. You might have to make eye contact.
But I started sort of noticing which way doors go, which can't be healthy. But
did you reach any conclusions about the usefulness of this? Is it true, actually? Is it true that the doors in Norway mostly open out?
I don't think it's true.
Where is it not true? Everywhere here is true.
I haven't
is this a
been,
Bergen thing?
I haven't been able to find a pattern of this. No, now I haven't actually counted all the doors, but yeah. Some of them goes in, some of them goes out.
Can't explain that.
Can't explain that. Well, we can't, actually. But I would think there would be some kind of principle behind which way to put a door.
Literally all of the ones in this office here open out from the room.
Blame the architect, I guess.
I guess.
In this room, the door opens in.
Hmm. Are you in the tiny podcasting lab space?
Yep.
Cool. it's nice that I know what your office looks like now.
Yeah, you came and missed it.
Yeah, it was cool.
We even recorded a podcast.
Yeah.
Almost.
Have you burned that yet? Like, just burn all the tapes. Make a big dumpster fire and just throw everything in there.
I almost burnt the podcast equipment that failed us. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah, you should do the rock star thing and, like, have a huge tantrum and throw it out the window.
I'll consider that. I often think about throwing my Mac through the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have written in the show notes or the episode planning list that we sort of agreed not to refer to, but I have sort of gone back on that because I listened to the podcast with John Syracuse and Merlin Mann. And they're constantly referring to the list. Also, Accidental Podcast, the tech podcast does it, so I think it's kosher.
Okay, good. Well, if our role models are doing it, then maybe it's okay. Maybe we just stole it from them, though. Maybe nothing we're doing is original.
Everything is a remix.
Indeed.
But a surprising note, Chris is Dutch now.
Yeah. So, you remember, like, we talked a few episodes ago about a couple of people had come to me and said, you know, like, are you American? Or assumed that I was American. And this has evolved. A couple of people in the last week or two assumed that I was from the Netherlands.
Something Holland. About my...
Indeed. Holland and the Netherlands, not the same thing, though, right? Like, this is a whole... Holland's just a region of the Netherlands, I think. Oh, boy, am I about to get, like, email. I think so. Like, they're used interchangeably in English, but I don't think they're actually the same thing. It would be like calling Scotland part of England or something. I think it's not entirely okay.
Well, I just gave the speech.
You did. Oh my God, the speech. Yeah, I'm remixing that with like a kind of techno, maybe drum and bass or something. And well, yeah, that's...
I'll put the original soundtrack behind that. That will give it gravitas. But
I'll give it something.
What is it? What's the deal with people and place names? Because, well, you guys have the UK, Great Britain, and so on, which we have still to explain. We have Scandinavia, Nordic countries, and so on.
Right.
And now Holland isn't Netherlands.
Well, now I'm doubting myself. What if it is? I have to Google.
I think it's also in German, I think they refer to Netherlands as Holland or something.
Yeah. In English, they're often used interchangeably. I'm looking at Wikipedia and it says, Holland is a region and former province on the western coast of the Netherlands. The name Holland is also frequently used informally to refer to the whole of the country of the Netherlands. I can sympathise with this because people often say England when they mean the whole of the UK. This usage is commonly accepted in other countries and not entirely uncommon among the Dutch themselves, though some in the Netherlands and particularly in other regions of the country may find it undesirable, misleading or insulting. Yes, I could see why. There you go.
You could see why? Why?
I've spent my entire life with people going, oh, you're from England. No, from Scotland. Yeah, England. No.
But there you have sort of the whole political background thing. Has Holland and Netherlands the same thing?
Are you going to make me read live online the entire history of the Netherlands? I'm not saying that wouldn't be interesting as a podcast, but I'm not sure that's what people have switched on for here.
Well, if you do it in a broader Scottish accent, it would perhaps be interesting.
The Netherlands, Dutch Nederland. It's the main constituent country of the Kingdom of the Netherlands. It's a densely populated country located in Western Europe with three island territories in the Caribbean. I'm just going to stop right there.
That was the accent. It sort of turned to 8, not 11, but okay. Did I just insult you, or...?
I'm not sure. I think let's just agree that everyone is massively insulted and move on. Declare victory and move on.
Right, Yeah, you're Dutch. That's interesting because We have a sort of interesting relationship with the Netherlands because we can almost understand Dutch intuitively.
I find it easier to read now that I can read Norwegian. Say more.
Well, because it's kind of the same thing as with German, right? We share somewhat vocabulary, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty Germanic, right, Dutch?
Yeah, it is. But it also has the music to it, sort of the pronunciation sounds that almost sounds Norwegian or vice versa.
Really?
So we have this, the Ylvis brothers just keep popping back into this podcast, but the guys behind What Does the Fox Say? They have this sketch where they call someone in the Netherlands, often a support line or something. And they speak this mock Dutch language.
Mm-hmm.
And they can they figure it out.
Oh, wow.
it's pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. It's like the total opposite of Kamaloso, which I actually wanted to talk about today.
It's actually the total opposite of the Kamaloso.
Wow. That's impressive.
So we can reach an understanding with the Dutch people, but not the Danish people.
No one can reach an understanding with the Danish people.
You have done some homework. You have immersed yourself in Norwegian comedy TV.
I have tried. I watched an episode of Utivor Hage, which is out in our garden, is that right?
Yeah.
And I was really pleasantly surprised. So Kamaloso, which is this sketch, and we'll put a link in the show notes, it's on YouTube, is this sketch that had come out of that show, and I didn't know that when I watched it, so it was kind of a nice surprise. It's these people, and it's that sketch. I don't even know how to describe the show. I mean, it's a sketch TV show, right? It's the same actors over and over again doing different things in different outfits as different characters for laughs.
Yeah, I struggled to find the... Well, you have... I think perhaps Britain is where these kind of sketch shows comes from.
Oh, really? You borrowed it from us?
Yeah, well... I guess Monty Python wasn't the first ones. They also was inspired by some others. But it started this whole thing with the sketch show and characters and shorter snippets and so on.
Was it on the radio? Oh, sorry. Carry on.
Not so much on the radio in Norway. I think it's more a TV thing. But these guys have done it for a while, but... The different thing with this TV show is they also have a reaching narrative structure to it.
Right. There was like a theme, the one that I watched.
Yeah, a thread or a theme. So, yeah. And I think you should keep watching it.
It was fun. It had more character development than I perhaps expected. But then I sent something to you to watch, and that has character development with bells on, not necessarily within an episode, but like over time.
Okay, because you... I forgot the name.
The Fast Show.
Yeah. And you pointed me to a scene with this classic... I guess England, landside, Downton Abbey setting, right? And a landlord and his gardener or something?
Gardener's a fair word, yeah. This is Ralph and Ted, for anyone who's actually seen The Fast Show.
I just paused for it. all our British listeners would perhaps appreciate... I know what you're talking about, right?
Right.
And yeah, it's just really subdued, sort of, you called it a romantic relationship or something.
Well, it's kind of, it's a suppressed romantic relationship, yeah, and that takes a lot of time, a lot of time to cook. Yeah, well, it is British.
But what I just learned now, because you told me, you know, or implied that there are more of these scenes and a sort of a development, right?
Most of these characters that you're seeing in that show recur for a long time. And is that the case with Uti Vorhage? Or is it completely different every time?
Well, it's sort of this anthology structure, I guess. So it's a pretty different narrative each time, but they're also recurring things.
Characters or themes?
Yeah.
Or both?
Yeah.
Sorry, you used the word anthology. Yes, it's very interesting. So when we're scripting this television show, we should be sure to structure it as an anthology and really, really curate.
Yeah, exactly. Rather.
Yeah. Ding.
So, yeah, should I keep watching it?
I don't know. Did you enjoy it enough to keep watching it? It's quite old now.
It is, and well, I guess because I watch a lot of English comedy, TV comedy, but it's more like the Peep Show, which I guess you couldn't watch.
I liked it. It was really painful, but I did like it, but it was really painful. It's just on the edge of like what I can tolerate.
And of course, they have their own sketch show. I'm really bad with names and remembering them on the fly. But the guys behind Peep Show, right?
Yeah. David Mitchell and other guy.
That Mitchell and Webb show.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good show. That also feels like it's a little bit old now, but it's still great.
Yeah, but they still have these clips popping up on the YouTubes and stuff. Like, are we the bad ones?
Right. That is great.
And the grammar Nazi.
I wanted to ask you about Number Wang. Have you come across Number Wang? I'm so tempted to just get you to watch it right now. You want?
Are we a React podcast?
Oh, I don't know.
Norwegians react to British TV.
Well, I don't know. Have a look at this, right? And then we can edit this out if this sucks. Because this is kind of... We were talking about Mornington Crescent before. And this is kind of what I objected to with that as well. But at the same time, I really enjoy this.
Well, I think I have seen this. And of course, the same actors you have seen 1 million times before.
Yep. So this gets to a thing that, like, this kind of cheeses me. Are you watching it or should we just talk about it?
You can talk while I watch.
Okay. Is that there's this whole kind of thing that randomness is in itself really funny.
Yeah.
And I think I sent you a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where they're playing Calvin Ball, which I think totally nails it and is funny. But Mornington Crescent to me, which is a game played on Radio 4, British radio programme, is funny the first time and then the concept gets kind of old.
So here we got demonstrated what could we call it? Well, the great artist steal thing.
Mm.
Because the same guys behind Uti Vorhage, they had sort of more of a live sketch show thing.
Okay.
This concept called Joker Nord, Joker or Joker is a sort of this lottery game thing in Norway, and it's pretty alike, similar to Number Wang. You have this randomness that don't go in the player's favor. Here the use of dialect is pretty present. So the concept is, this is your Joker game, but it's the sort of Northern Norway version of it. And I guess we could, well, it would make sense for the non-Norwegian listeners to have this sound under, but
yeah. Right. How much of it is laughing at people's accents versus, or dialects versus...
It isn't about that, thing. Actually, but the accent gives it sort of credibility, or it's sort of there to make some sort of atmosphere, but it isn't the accent in itself.
Okay.
And perhaps you didn't know that, but in that life we all often refer sort of very bad interaction design. We often refer to that as Jokernord, because you don't ever know what's gonna happen, and it's just weird rules. And yeah,
I didn't know that. That's great. I'll have to listen for that. Nice. That makes me want to show you the German episode of Nimbavang, which also exists. I can give you a link for that. Again, we're treading dangerously close to the German episode, I think, with that.
Well, the Germans is always on the borders, right?
Like on the fringes of conversations, or literally just over the border waiting? Because
for some
that's
reason,
kind of...
it has developed during these 12 episodes a sort of German antagonism. That I don't have at all.
Me neither. Me neither. Really. I'm a huge fan of Germany. Yeah, I don't know what's happening there. Do you need to stop and mop up coffee?
I think I do.
Fine. Take all the time you need.
You can watch the Jokernord in the meanwhile.
I can.
And we'll probably edit this out.
I think so.
So what will feel like 5 minutes for us will feel like 5 seconds for you. Think about that. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I'm about a third of the way in. The guy's doing a voice, which is in itself kind of amusing. I was thinking while I was watching this, is comedy funnier in your second language? Because like a big part of funny is recognition of something. Like it's really hard to get a joke without some kind of moment of recognition. And I wondered about this a little bit before. Is there like extra relief in the recognition if you're watching something funny in a second language? Because you're like, there's that kind of recognition of the thing that's funny, and then there's the additional, hey, I recognize that kind of relief. Like, even though I'm operating in a second language where I'm not as comfortable, blah, 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 I made it, I get it.
I don't think it's funnier, but... As you said, it has this added value or feeling of mastering something, I guess. Do you find Norwegian comedy funnier when you get it?
I haven't watched enough to be able to say. I'll work on that. I noticed the kind of the enjoyment of recognition a lot more. Like one of the first things that I noticed when I was working here was that sometimes people would drop in an English word or phrase to be funny, or because it was like more apropos. And that always made me smile. And I recognized in myself that the smile was partly like a recognition of, okay, I get that, on top of whatever additional effect that the person meant it to have. And I kind of wonder if the same thing is happening here.
For that We don't have that situation as much, right? It's pretty rare that, for example, an English-speaking comic use Norwegian words or
yeah
to make a point. Well, I guess English-speaking stand-up comedians would do that in a show to sort of use a Norwegian phrase or something to have some to get some laughs, right? Because we love when foreigners try to speak Norwegian, right?
So fairly.
This is pretty universal, I guess. People generally like that other people from other cultures and languages try to speak the language. Sometimes in sort of the bad way and sometimes in a good way.
Can you say more about both of those? Like, there's kind of Schadenfreude element to watching someone just get it horribly wrong, or?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, now I'm wondering how often I've done that.
We will never tell you.
You have to tell me. How am I supposed to learn?
You just have to, I guess. This is the brutal reality of learning Norwegian.
The hard way.
The hard way.
Yeah. It's like the kind of linguistic equivalent of being taken out onto the mountain and left there as a young person. And if I find my way back to the encampment, then, you know, I'm basically like an adult now. And if I'm eaten by wolves, that's how that goes. Or back to Darwin again. That didn't take long.
Been taken to the mountain and have to sit there with a black metal musician for 5 minutes in stone silence.
Oh, I hope everyone watched that clip. Otherwise, I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. If you can stare that guy down, then you're one of the tribe now. Yeah.
And you don't even have to speak. You could growl, I guess. But yeah, and for the comedy thing, also, good comedy, I guess, would always have multiple layers. So you have the comedy on the surface, the situation in which we can recognize sort of ourselves and so on. But for example, Ute I vår hage, there are also layers of references to Norwegian culture or and so on.
Yeah, I worry that I'm just missing all these, by the way.
I guess you would, but the comedy isn't dependent on you getting it all. So you can sort of watch it multiple times and get more out of it, right?
Right.
And but the same thing would go for us and British comedy. Because
yeah,
even though we get much British culture over the border, we don't have it all. And I guess especially for everything that has to do with politics and so on, that would pretty much be missed on us.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about the episode of The Fast Show. And I'm trying to think about how much of that is just sort of about society and whether it translates. Like, there's a scene with Caroline Ahern where she's sitting on a train with her very henpecked husband talking to someone who is, I guess, a stranger, and only brings in the husband to confirm what she said. And it's just kind of painful, but it's probably a universal to some extent. It's probably recognisable. As someone who's sort of very chatty and, you know, their partner just can't get a word in edgeways, and then they get a little bit and then they're off again.
But for example, we had this TV show in when I grew up on Norwegian TV from I guess England, with this character, Mrs. Bucket, right? Or Mrs. Bouquet.
Hyacinth Bouquet.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was that called now again?
Oh, is it Keeping Up Appearances? I never really watched it, but I know it
Keeping
exists.
Keeping Up Appearances. But it had a Norwegian title in Norway, which I, of course, can't remember. Because keeping up appearances, it's pretty obvious what it deals with, right?
But right, but they didn't reuse that here? They didn't just literally translate it?
No. Let's see. in Norwegian, it's called høy på pæra.
High on the fence? No. No, what?
High on the pear, like the fruit.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, it means that you think highly of yourself. It's back to the Janta okay. thing, I guess. But yes, so the class thing didn't translate.
Right. Was it just a really weird program then?
No, it wasn't, because it was still funny. It was funny that this has somewhat to do with that I was young, right? And
sure.
And I hadn't learned the sociology of certification, class, and so on. But it was funny because it's still sort of this. There's still conflict, right? And stakes and funny ways to go about it.
Yeah, right. I mean, the premise of any kind of narrative is conflict, right? And it's kind of interesting though, like if the class thing didn't translate, I'm just trying to wonder what is left. Probably not very much, other than someone being thwarted, I guess, in their ambitions. Yeah.
We understood that she stressed about keeping a facade, right, and so on. But I don't know how deep the connotation is. But the commentary here, I think that was lost on Manny.
Yeah. Like, is it just kind of? I want to say grinless. Is it just kind of like, there's this person doing stuff and it seems completely pointless and we don't understand why she would do these things? Or
no, not like that. Also, we understand trying to seem better or finer or richer than you are.
Mm.
Like that's not dependent on a class system.
Oh, but doesn't that just go in the face of all of these egalitarian principles?
but of course, I think all the references and how Hyacinth went about being sort of more upper classy, I guess that perhaps is funnier if you know and or live among these people, right?
Mm. Have you ever watched a British TV show where you were just like, I don't get it, this is not culturally resonant, or where it seemed very far away from where you are culturally, as a where this country is culturally? You mentioned Downton Abbey.
But here's the problem, because tales from the English or British upper class has been with us all the time, from Jane Austen to whatever, right?
Right. So it's kind of baked in.
Yeah, I mentioned that I spent the summer reading Woodhouse.
Right.
And I think that's funny. because of the same reasons, right?
You think Woodhouse is funny, or you think it's funny that you spent a summer reading Woodhouse?
When you say that. So no, not in that sense. But I must admit that Fast Show was a bit lost on me.
Okay.
But is it meant to be absurd, or is it? And when I have to ask that perhaps reveals something.
Is it meant to be absurd? Yes, in the sense that comedy is often, by definition, absurd. But I think all of the scenarios and the people, particularly like the characters in the Far Show, really strong British archetypes, I guess. They're instantly recognisable. The scenarios like go over, you know, it's comedy. They're supposed to be an exaggeration. Yeah. But the characters are really on the corner, as you would say. They skewer very accurately a lot of kind of British archetypes.
Because I suspected that, because it seems closer to British daily life or something.
Right.
Than other things. Because the Mitchell and Webb show, it's more... There you have a more internal setup. So you aren't as dependent on cultural sort of recognition to have it be funny. The Are We the Bad Guys is funny in itself, right?
Right. And they kind of build the premise inside the sketch. You don't need to know anything. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Hmm. So maybe that's more, easily translatable. Did you watch much Monty Python growing up? I guess it was on the TV here.
Yeah.
That's straight up ridiculous. Like,
it is.
Was that... Now I'm wondering what the Norwegian experience of that is like. This is ridiculous, isn't it? Funny, I guess. I mean...
Yeah, I suspect it's pretty much the same as in the... Well, for us, Monty Python were sort of the first ones, I guess. But it wasn't for you. Even Monty Python was derivative of some other older guys, I guess.
I
used to know this, but yeah.
That, there was some stuff on That Was the Week That Was, and then there was The Goons on the radio.
Mm.
And I guess that's where they got a lot of their stuff. Or the shtick came from there. There's a good word, shtick. People use the word shtick in Norway?
No, I don't. No, I don't think so.
Hmm. Please don't make me define it.
So, yeah. And I guess we could dive deeper into Norwegian humor and comedy later. But yeah, Monty Python was pretty influential.
And on you personally, or yeah, on both, Norwegian comedy?
Both. And as for Norwegian comedy, I think it was dominated by the Monty Python-esque sketch setup characters, at least for all of the 80s and much of the 90s before the irony thing came, which the guys behind Uti Vodhage was responsible for. They sort of brought irony into Norwegian television.
In the sense of kind of satirizing stuff, or
yeah, not perhaps in the sense of the satire, because we always have had satire, but the ironic remove, sort of the distance from the thing. So they were a bit controversial in that they singled out some persons in the Norwegian public and sort of made fun of them. Not necessarily mean-hearted, but so removed that people wasn't sure if this was okay. So, yeah.
Hmm. What was their point in doing that? I mean, usually it's to kind of point out hypocrisy.
It wasn't that. I think the reason was that they had this sort of bubble and they just found this person or character or what he or she did funny in itself and wanted to disseminate that in some way. But I also think they want to explore boundaries and, yeah.
Okay. I'm just remembering there was a British TV show in the 80s, which was like the must-see show called Spitting Images, which was political and kind of contemporary satire, I guess. And it had these very distinctive looking puppets that basically caricatured mostly politicians, but famous people generally. I just put a link in. It became, it kind of defined, it was so popular and so, it had such wide reach at a time when we had very few TV channels and very, very few other things to entertain, that it kind of formed, I think it formed a lot of people, certainly it formed a lot of my impressions of who people actually were, who famous people were and politicians. And it played very well on their worst physical and personal traits. So you have these, like Margaret Thatcher was kind of characterized as this sort of this amazing battle axe. And I think there was an episode after she died. Oh God, there was an episode right after, I can't remember when this was, but like there was an episode in which she died for whatever reason. And the Queen came in to, like, everyone filed past the coffin to pay their respects. And the Queen came in and looked around to make sure no one else was watching and just emitted this kind of kind of laugh. It was amazing. I hope I haven't made that up. That is a very unreconstructed and previously unexamined memory. But yeah, it was quite a thing. Did it come over here? Does any of this look familiar?
No, I don't. It didn't.
Maybe it was just too British to be useful.
I think I've seen some of these caricatures before, but no, it's new to me. And did we have a similar thing in Norway? I don't think so.
Right. Incidentally, like sort of 10 or 15 or 20 years after this show, like a lot of the people who were behind it in the writing and the impersonations became famous in their own right as comedians. Yeah, and
Steve Coogan.
Right. Rory Bremner is the one I'm thinking of, actually. He was probably like the... Do you know Rory Bremner?
Not by name.
He's a super funny... well, he's best at being other people. He is one of the best impressionists that we could possibly have. He's just amazing.
Yeah, I've seen him, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for some reason, political satire, it's often about impressions, sort of taking the role of the politician and exercising some sort of dialogue that makes some kind of point by the policy or values of that politician, right? And I wonder if it's harder to be an impressionist in Norway because of all the dialects than in Britain.
Oh, you mean you get more of a workout?
Something like that.
I would agree with you, except for people like Rory Bremner and... Oh, another guy whose name I cannot recall to my shame, who are extremely sharp with accents. No, we don't really have the dialect thing, but they're very good. The other guy's name will hopefully come to me in a moment. But yeah, I would say like my overwhelming impression in Norway is that the range is way wider. So it would be much more of a challenge, I think, to an impressionist or a comedian to really fill those shoes. And to, like, because there is nothing worse, little callback to the start of the show, there is nothing more terrifying than hearing someone speaking in an accent that they think sounds like yours and is nothing like it.
For your reconciliation, I didn't think that I sounded Scottish at all.
I know. It's fine. That wasn't a slap in the face. That was done affectionately.
No, it wasn't. It was done desperately.
I meant from my side of the table. Okay. It looks fine. I understand it for what it is. That's fine. And I'm impressed that you gave it a shot. Goodness knows I would struggle to pull off a Norwegian regional accent at the moment, so let alone dialect.
Now I'm tempted to challenge you.
Okay, give me something to say.
Well, perhaps the Jokenord would be a start.
What, I've got to memorize that? That's a lot of words. That's like nearly five minutes of television.
Oh, not a whole thing, but something. Some
Give me a sentence.
I don't remember a sentence from that sketch I haven't watched for a while.
Oh, give me something that someone from with a hardcore dialect would say.
I'm asking the questions here.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. No. If I'm going to be in discomfort, you need to come down there with me. This is not a one person show.
I did the Mel Gibson thing.
You did, and I respect
that's
that.
That's enough discomfort for a whole episode, I guess.
Okay, right. I'll go away. I'll do my Next homework. Week. I'll find something to read out, and then you can die in a pit of despair while I read aloud.
Where are those pits of despair?
Everywhere, man. They're just everywhere you look. Mm-hmm. Like the internet, like Twitter.
So we have almost a whole episode about, I guess, British television. But you claim that you haven't really watched British television. Or have you? Or what's the deal?
Very little. Like when I went away to university, which was several years ago now, I didn't have a TV for a long time, and it meant that I was kind of dependent on other people's televisions and goodwill, and I kind of stopped watching broadcast TV at that point, and I never entirely got back into it. And then the internet happened, and that was more interesting than most of the things on television, and then it became possible to stream television, and it became possible to get television written in the US, and the US is experiencing what I think is like a huge golden age in TV writing. It's just amazing, the quality of stuff. Like, it's not all gold, but there's lots of stuff that is really, really well put together. I guess from kind of things like The West Wing and The Sopranos and 6 Feet Under and stuff that was kind of coming out like maybe the early 2000s. And that was so compelling that I basically just dropped British TV and broadcast TV mostly. It was not interesting to me in the slightest. And here were all these shows that were exploring stuff at a really deep level that were written by lots, I think, of people. Like, most of these shows are written by, not all, like The Wire's basically David Simon plus a couple of people, right? But they got such depth and vision, and they were talking to me about stuff that was interesting to me, and British TV was not interesting. So it's probably really unfair to say that I don't like British TV, because I have no idea what's happened in British TV in the last 15 years.
Well, now I understand a bit better, because you scoffed at, for example, Doctor Who, right? Or are you...
I tried so hard. I watched half of season one of the new Doctor Who, like when Christopher Eccleston was in it, because I'm a big fan of his. And I could not tolerate the writing anymore. It was a sack of shit.
Yeah, because, well, I got into Doctor Who in... for the reboot, and yeah, I agree with you that the first season was not that great, but the reason I stuck to it was something else, it was different, right? And Doctor Who is it's a weird show. It's almost as it's in its own universe, right? Haha. But it got way better, and the production value got way better.
Did the writing get better? That's all I care about.
Yeah, it did.
Okay.
Well, the air quotes problem is that they often have other people writing. So even Neil Gaiman has written some Doctor Who episodes.
I can imagine his might be good.
Yeah, exactly. It's somewhat dependent on the writing, of course, and also the actors. But when the writing is good, it's pretty great, the show.
I think patchiness is a thing that I struggle with. Like, if a show is, like, good one week and crap the next, it's very difficult to stick with it. I just want consistency, that's all I want.
You have to embrace entropy. I guess Doctor Who taught me that.
I guess so. A thing I wonder about with shows like Doctor Who is it's huge in the States, and it's clearly very...
Everything is huge in the States.
Well, everything British is huge in the States, and this is my point. This kind of comes back to this recognition thing. Like, when British culture is exported to the US, it's often embraced, I think, really uncritically by
and
people.
Then they feel the urge to remake it.
Oh, God, what's that about? Yeah. Let's take this thing that's special characteristic to us, even though we're maybe not aware of it, is that we love it, and we love it because it's different and it's British and it's in some way quirky or obsessed with class or whatever. And let's iron all of that stuff out of it entirely and remake it for an American audience. Yeah, my beef is kind of with Anglophilia, and I see it here as well, but it's... I'm very, very accustomed to seeing it in people in the States who are like, oh my God, this new thing is out, it's so amazing, and it's British, and it's actually not amazing, but it's British, and that's that kind of understanding it and seeing it and going, oh, I kind of get this, I think is what's happening there. I think it's this total preoccupation. What?
Sherlock.
Yeah, another thing I have not watched because I think I would hate it, but Americans are crazy for it, right?
It's got the cucumber
Cumberbatch, Bandersnatch, guy,
and Frodo, or was it Bilbo, or that guy from
Groucho, Marxo,
The Office, but not the good version, or
yeah, but like. That's my thesis here, right, is that this stuff is liked by people because it's kind of foreign, but they kind of get it. And it's exactly the same as like watching comedy in a second language and going, ha, I got that extra kind of recognition thing.
Did you just undermine the whole of the US?
Oh, gosh, I hope
so. Yeah, well, they deserve it.
Maybe a little bit right now, yeah.
Or... Perhaps they don't, perhaps they sort of got it too bad, but I'm not sure. Should we feel sorry?
I feel sorry for a lot of people in the US right now. There are a lot of people who I think deserve our sympathy and pity at this time. And by that, I mean literally every single one, but yeah.
In a couple of years, they can't even watch British television because it's banned.
Right, it's too foreign. You'll get like bootleg kind of underground channels that people are obtaining this stuff on, I know, vinyl or, you know, whatever. What will be allowed into the country that we can like cleverly engrave television programs onto? Fries?
No, fries would be the first thing to go.
Because they're French?
Yeah.
Even if they're freedom fries?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I guess the younger Trump with the clothing line. they would still make the clothes in China. China, right? So
right.
So perhaps do something. Some British television shows into the seams.
Oh, I like it. Maybe we could put them in the RFID chips.
Good idea.
Hmm. Near field viewing. We'll just hold your phone near it, and you can watch.
we'll have your backs, dear American listener. Trust us.
Just the one. Hi, Mike.
I guess how should we go about smuggling this podcast into the US?
On the back of a British television show. Just encode it in a very thin strip. By the side of the rest of the thing, and yeah. Wow, we've gone down a whole road.
And almost through a wall.
Indeed. Well, no one's getting through that wall. Actually, I've seen Pacific Rim, everything's getting through that wall. I understand how this works.
You had a question about our king.
I did. There I was, minding my own business, watching NRK, like a good Norwegian citizen, watching the news, and they had a thing about the fact that King Harald is 80 years old, and looking very well for it, I feel. And there was this whole piece about, they had people talking about the monarchy and, you know, should the monarchy continue? Is it right that the monarchy exists in a democracy? And some, you know, the person saying, well, we, you know, we live in a constitutional monarchy, blah, 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 and all of this, this conversation. And then they cut to a shot of the palace, you know, like taken from a helicopter or whatever. And music played, and it was the British national anthem. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Really, what is happening? What is the Norwegian national anthem? I've deliberately not found out because I wanted to ask you about it.
Haven't you heard the Norwegian national anthem?
Well, now I'm wondering if it's the same as the British one. Really?
I imagine that you had to sit in a dark room during your sort of immigration process and listen to it for at least 5 hours.
Until I was reprogrammed.
Yeah.
Successfully.
No, it isn't the same. And it's called Ja, vi elsker.
Yes, we love.
And the first line is, yes, we love this country. As it arises. And the next line after that, I can't even try to translate. It's something about...
What is it?
Being a sort of a pine landscape or something.
But, what's no, the line?
No, no, it's... Well, this would be my word of the week.
Mm.
So I will recitate the two first lines in Norwegian.
Okay.
Ja, vi elsker dette landet, som det stiger frem. Furet tverrbitt over vannet I de tusen hjem. I hope I got it right now. But
if not, your ass is over the border.
So
midnight
how
tonight.
How much of that did you get?
Most of it. The tusen bit, I was like, I'm not sure where this has come from. I'm not sure I could repeat it all to you. That was too much information for me. My working memory buffer has now overflowed. But I understood it while you were saying it.
So yeah, furet værbitt over vannet. Ah,
no, the pine now, is
now I feel stupid. Well, so the land that arises, it's full of pines, and it has sort of it's marked by the weather over the waters. With a thousand homes, because when it was written, there were just 1,000 homes. No, it wasn't. It was more, but yeah.
That's kind of lovely and very romantic in the kind of traditional Norwegian romantic landscape thing.
Yeah.
Our national anthem is all about the monarch. It is tedious as fuck.
This is interesting because the national anthem isn't... so much about the monarchy.
And that speaks well, very highly of you as a country.
Well, with a footnote, because the second verse, it's about the genealogy or the genesis of the country, which is pretty much all about monarchy or yeah. Viking kings and stuff like
does
that.
It, but does it yeah. talk about how like you couldn't really get your own monarchy, so you just borrowed one from Denmark?
No, this was before that. It's much about so Norwegian national romanticism. It's much about the landscape and the mountains and the idea of a farmer, and so on. So it's you
very
you,
kind of pastoral romantic ideal, right?
Yeah. So you got these themes throughout the this song, and it's about sort of fighting against the hard nature. In order to domesticate it and to live on and the community and so on.
That's the most Norwegian thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's the national anthem, so
it's yeah, but that's great. But like, if the national anthem, if there's like a kind of, I don't know, is synecdoche even the right word here? But like, if that is reflective of the kind of the national psyche. What does it say about the UK that ours is all like, yeah, the monarch is really noble and hopefully they'll live a long time and meh, meh, meh. Vi är helt upptatt av klass.
Yeah, and I would guess that you will discover this come the 17th of May.
I'd love to say yes, but aren't we going to be in Berlin?
No. Not the 17th of May.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Stop everything.
That would be outrageous if they are making us go away to Berlin for that day.
Everyone looks in Slack.
The tension.
I know, right?
The excitement.
I can't find anything. I'm still looking. Okay, the good news for you is that we are in Berlin the week before 17th of May. So it's all fine. We're back in the country. It's all good. We can do our Norwegian language episode. That was my nightmare, by the way, that we'd be doing a Norwegian language episode after I'd been listening to German all week. My brain is going to be so fried that week.
I don't think you will be listening to German all week.
I'll be asking people for coffee and stuff. I'm going to be listening to German all week. We're going to be in Berlin.
Will you address them in German?
Natürlich.
You imagine that we will sort of mingle with the native population of Berlin?
Well, otherwise we might just as well be the blind people who go for a holiday to Spain in Utivorhaga.
Exactly. Our company, beloved company NatLife Research, we will go on a company trip to Berlin in May. To live amongst the startup hipsters of
right,
Berlin.
Right, in Kreuzberg.
Sehr. So, yeah.
Viel Spaß, as you said yesterday.
And perhaps that will be the place to record the German episode, where we talk about the Norwegian relationship with Germany and vice versa.
Yes, we should do that. We should try and pull in like a real German person also.
A real German person.
As opposed to a fake German person. I'm sure they have those too, but...
I guess my cultural pick of the week is the Norwegian national anthem.
Okay.
Keep pushing the real pick in front of me.
We'll never get there. It's fine. It's fine.
But then again, I think I botched... the recitation of the two first lines. And I guess most Norwegians only know the first verse. Or perhaps two of the verses.
Yeah, I don't think most British people could get beyond the first verse, honestly.
So we'll post a link in the show notes. And apropos the show notes, Chris, where can people find them?
They can find the show notes at smalldifferences.fireside.fm. And in addition to the show notes, you will find links to everything that we've talked about that lives on the web and a list of words of the week and everything else that we can find to stuff in there that's in any way relevant.
Do you have a cultural pick of the week? You have two.
It's the same thing.
Both. Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. So I did a very Oslo thing the other day, although actually it turns out it's not a very Oslo thing. So... apparently, and this is the same as London, it's really funny. Apparently, when you've lived in Oslo for some time, you stop going and enjoying all the things that you can do in Oslo. You just don't go out. And this is the thing that people told me about when I moved to London, to say, enjoy it, because what you find is that after a year or so here, you just stop doing all the things that you can do in London. You stop doing all the kind of cool stuff. So I thought, while I was still fresh here, I should do an Oslovian thing. So I in my own house, I put on all my snowboarding gear and I grabbed my snowboard and I walked to public transport and I got on public transport. And about 50 minutes later, I was at the ski hill and I went snowboarding for a day on real snow outdoors. It was beautiful. And then at the end of the day, picked up my snowboard, got back on public transport, got off at the other end, walked a little bit. I was home again. And that's so cool to be able to do that. You can't. I don't think you can do that anywhere in the UK. I struggle to think where in the UK. Even Aviemore, maybe in Aviemore you could do it. But that's like one place.
That sounds great.
It was really cool.
I couldn't do that. I could take a bus for, I guess, 2 or 3 hours. No, I could take a train.
I think it's an hour and 40 minutes to your nearest ski resort.
Yeah, to Bus. Yeah.
Somewhere Dalen, I think.
Eikedalen?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I only know this because I had to look it up for work.
Yeah, you wrote some you wrote some Norwegian tourist texts.
I did, in English though.
Yeah.
It was super fun.
How was that?
Well, the client really liked it. I was really happy. Yeah. I wrote, it was kind of nice to be writing stuff for tourists as a tourist or as a foreigner in this country because I got to be excited about things. but like to convey that excitement in a way that maybe is harder to do. You know, if I were to write tourist information for Edinburgh or Scotland, for example, it would be quite hard to be enthusiastic about it because I'm just like, yeah, well, there's this castle and there's this palace and yeah, we got some hills and yeah, it's cool, I guess. You take it for granted, right?
You wouldn't do it ironically. Go visit the magnificent castles on the shore, right? Could you do it?
Could I do it like tongue in cheek? Like, could I?
Yeah.
Well, now I'll tell you what. That's my challenge for next week, right? That's another challenge for next week is to see if I can write some very cheesy tourist copy for Scotland. I'm not sure, like, I'm not sure I can top anything that's actually out there because, again, with the kind of, not Anglophilia, but, like, Britophilia, like, you don't have to try very hard, for example, to get people from the US or Europe and the Far East as well very excited about Scotland because it's got this whole romantic thing.
You do that and I'll try to read it in a Scottish accent.
Awesome. And yeah. I'll try and find something that I can read in Norwegian, in the Norwegian dialect. Who should I have for my coach, my Norwegian dialect coach? Because, you know, in the movies, they've always got, like, dialect coaches listed at the end of the movie. Who helped Mel Gibson sound fractionally, or who tried to help Sean Connery sound fractionally less Scottish and got absolutely nowhere with it?
Like in That Life?
Sean Connery's never been in That Life, as far as I'm aware.
No.
Yes.
Your coach in That Life.
Who in That Life, yeah.
I think perhaps Øyvind would be the best person.
I'm having a beer with Øyvind on Thursday night.
Yeah, he's pretty good at least.
I will make him teach me.
He's pretty good at impersonating Natlifers, at least. So
that's a very rarefied fraction of Norwegian dialect and culture as a whole. But okay,
did
you
know that we recruit to have sort of a cross section of all the Norwegian fauna, including, yeah.
There are bears and wolves?
You haven't been to that.
I haven't been to that office.
No.
Oh, can I go to the office with the wolves, please? I'll work really hard.
That's only for seniors.
You are pretty old. I'm pretty old.
so your cultural pick is to live in Oslo.
It's doing a thing that you can do. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention about this was like the personal space thing. It didn't come up kind of directly as a result of that trip, but there were a couple of points where I was aware of it. So like in the UK, observing personal space is a very respectful process. You've got to give people as much room as possible. Like in an elevator, you want to stand like equally distributed, right? Like you can't stand right next to someone or it will get weird. And I was at my Norwegian course last night, and in the break, I went downstairs and I sat and I ate and drank something. And like the place is completely deserted, right? And I sat at this little table with some chairs. And then a woman came and she sat like a meter and a half away from me. And there was no one else like in the whole place. And she sat a meter and a half away from me. And I was like, oh, this would not pass in the UK. This is like bordering on harassment in the UK. This is just way, way too close.
This was in, where do you go to for your Norwegian lessons?
So I'm learning at the Folkeuniversitetet. It's like their campus building is, it's like a videregående, actually.
Mm. Well, that's weird, because you would think, because mathematically we have a lot of personal space in Norway.
You'd think that.
Yeah, well, because sort of the geographical area divided by the population gives you a lot of space.
Mm.
And if you go outside of Oslo, there will be a lot of space. So if you get a house outside of Oslo, you will also get some estate, right?
Right.
But so you would think that Norwegians would be used to and appreciate a larger area of personal space, sort of the opposite of India or something, right?
Right.
But then again, we would choose to not, when we are given the choice, we don't, I guess.
You like to be near other people, okay, physically?
Not too close, but somewhat close, I guess. Because I struggle with this, because I take a lot of bus back in to work, and you have this situation where people generally prefer their own seat.
Right.
But when you have to share the seats, or the sort of the two seats, you have this situation that perhaps a seat beside of you gets free because the person leaves.
Right.
Do you move or don't you move? Because moving to the other seat could be interpreted that I don't want to, you are disgusting, or I want to create more space between us.
Gotcha.
So you have this negotiation. It's generally it's accepted or perfectly fine to move to the free seats, and perhaps even appreciated, right? But there is this negotiation going on, or at least in my head, that I think in other people's head as well.
Yeah.
I
recognize that from the UK. I think people in the UK would almost always move and take the two free seats. I don't know how much people think about it. In London, I think it's a thing that people often do, but I think that's just to get away from the press of people, because there's just so many frigging people in London. And not a lot of space. So I think it's accepted as a thing that's like totally legit to do. Like, yes, enjoy that moment, that two stops on the bus before someone comes and sits next to you again. You go, buddy. Except, you know, like not American.
I guess we have to explore personal space a bit more to sort of pin it down and find the algorithms.
Word of the week?
Yeah, so I chose that a bit. Mainly because I'm so bad at homework. so I forgot again to have a word of the week in prior of the episode. But then we talked about the national anthem, and that bit occurs. And it's a word that often confuses people in Norway when we have to sing this song. What does that mean? I can't explain why, but it's not a common word that we use in our daily speech, which is perhaps weird, because what it means is beaten by the weather.
Right.
Weather beaten, right?
Right.
But bit, it's it can mean another thing in Norway, like the thing you do with your mouth.
To bite,
yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, beaten by the weather, which is the thing in Norway.
Beaten or eaten by the weather?
Beaten. Beaten.
Yeah, but because beat, also eaten by the weather.
I don't think you have that. It's more like title. Hit. It's more like... Yeah.
Beaten down, yeah. And but the overwhelming kind of thing there is like, we will not be crushed by the weather. We will overcome, right?
And also, I'm so bad at my own language. Furet, which I have always interpreted as like the tree, the sort of the tree types, like the pine.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that.
You're kidding me. I would have said it that, well, furi is pine, right?
Yeah.
So what is it, actually?
It's the decrease in I will try to find the translation into English. We should have some Googling soundtrack music waiting thing.
Right.
Furrowed? Yeah, furrowed.
Huh?
Groove, right? Sort of an impression in some kind of surface.
Right.
So, from this line, furet værbit over landet. So, it would be...
furrow, to furrow out our piece of land.
Like
to
the valleys kind of, and
to cultivate it.
Yeah.
Dyrkede, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
So, it's sort of the opposite of being a forest, a wood, woods.
This beautiful land, we're going to chop it the hell down.
Yeah.
And we're going to tame it, and we're going to beat it into a pulp and make some paper, and yeah, I guess we'll grow some things and some animals.
There wasn't much paper production in Norway. I think we exported much of our wood.
Yeah.
Those are Christmas trees.
Paper production is huge in Sweden and Finland. Is it not big here?
No, I don't think so.
You just export all the wood and let other people take care of that whole tedious processing thing. There are a lot of trains with logs on here, I notice. My word of the week. This is actually a phrase. Opisse I byxa for a hola varmen. I love this. I have this big dictionary of Norwegian phrases and expressions, and which we talked about briefly before.
This would be in the dictionary.
I see what we did there. To piss in your trousers to stay warm. And what a wonderful phrase that is. It's very evocative. And it made me laugh when I read it. But it's also great, right? Because, of course, what happens after you've done that is after a little while, you're wearing a pair of cold, wet trousers that smell like piss. And so it's one of those kind of acting now to do something that might be desirable right now, but the long-term consequences of it are not desirable. So it's kind of short-term benefit for long-term loss, I guess.
That's interesting, because you interpreted that as the bad consequence of this is to have a smell afterwards.
Well, and to be cold and wet.
Yeah, because that's the main thing. Of how it gets colder.
Right.
I haven't heard much about the smell, actually. So.
Well, that was an afterthought, but you're going to be wearing this pair of cold, wet trousers that also smell like piss.
But it's a pretty common idiom, and we often use it in our consultancy work. You can do this now, but that's going to bite you later.
I feel sure that I will be called upon to use this at some point.
And it's sufficient to say that's like pissing your trousers, full stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but the for a whole environment, like to keep warm, like if you, I think it's sort of missing the point. Like in English, if you just said to piss in your trousers, the connotation would be that you were afraid. To piss your pants is to be afraid. So you've got to have that extra bit to say you're doing this to achieve a specific aim. But it's going to come and bite you.
But you know, in Norway, we don't know about fear. We are never afraid. So it's always about the keeping warmth.
Right. You're too busy carving out a small piece of land and trying to dominate it.
I found a name for the character.
Okay.
Norwegian guy.
Yeah. Oh, Norwegian guy, that's it.
Yeah.
I thought that was the lead-in.
You could You could put in a definitive article if you want, but...
He's not like Karen or Fieren or something.
Karen, that's a female name.
But it also means the guy, right? The bloke.
I wonder if this is a funem thing, but because Karen, Karen.
Ah, you see, this is a tonal thing.
Yeah.
Which is which?
What will you guess?
Karen is someone's name.
Karen.
Oh, there was an uptick.
Karen.
Karen. Karen is the guy and Karen is someone's name?
Correctamundo.
It's really hard. English is not tonal. It's really hard. And then we get into the whole bunner thing, right?
Sola.
Yeah.
That's difficult. So the one thing was the sun and the other thing was a place in the west coast of Norway.
Right. And bunner is beans and the farmer. Oh, no, farmers. And I came across a list of these, a fairly exhaustive list, about a month ago. And it was one of the most depressing experiences of learning Norwegian I have had, to look at this really long list of things that are fractionally, if I pay really close attention, discernible to me, and that I can maybe, possibly, on a good day, reproduce myself and just think, I know nothing. I know absolutely nothing. There's this tonal thing that I'm just kind of conveniently ignoring, but it's real and it makes the difference between what a sentence means. Ah.
Welcome to Norway. I guess we have work. Lots of work.
Yeah. So much work. You have a Moomin mug.
Yeah, but that's Finnish.
Well, I don't know whether you finished it or not. I can't see in.
Next week.
Where to go from here?
I'm tempted to... But this will require a bit of preparation. I'm going to Denmark tomorrow. I'm going to Copenhagen.
How cool. Why? Because
holiday.
Nice.
Free time, I guess. But it's the winter holiday in Norway. Which sounds perhaps like... Isn't there always winter in Norway?
Right.
But yeah, so perhaps I could tell about that, the cross-Scandinavian experience of being a Norwegian in Copenhagen.
Please do.
Which is almost the same as being an alien in New York, I guess. So
I look forward to hearing about it.
So next week, the Kamaloso episode.
Finally.
Ha det bra, og takk for du... Nei, I couldn't even. Takk for nå. Mange takk. Neste uke. Vi høres.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.